It's in worse shape than I thought. I rode into Bastille to make sure it was unoccupied, but I hardly needed confirmation. The Jawas picked the place over long ago. There's a shell of a vaporator. If I can ever get it working right, it needs parts still. And the place should have a low profile if I can remove the trash from the yard. You can imagine what kind of junk even a Jawa would pass up. I was worried it was going to require more trips to Bastille. That's 40 kilometers or so. But maybe there's another option. Annalene. That's Annalene Calwell, a woman from the Pico Oasis, and her daughter. The Oasis is close, and from what she says, it has more of what I need to set up housekeeping here. Meeting her gave me a chance to finally use the name I chose. You'll like this. Ben. I had seen it on the map at the property office in Bastille. There's some mesa by that name. Steen used to call me that. It was a private thing. I like the sound of it. I'm afraid I drew some attention to myself when I met Annalene. I won't get into details, but she was in trouble, and I helped her. It felt good to be doing something after all this hiding, and good to be talking to someone again when I'm feeling so alone and... Ah, well. I don't know. I'm closer to the Oasis, but it's closer to me, too. Maybe it's not a good idea to become too familiar a sight with the locals. I probably won't go.
Chapter 7.
How it look, Master Gold?
Real pretty, Glomer. Orin ran his hand across the new windshield on the landspeeder. Like new? I don't know how you do it. Orin wasn't surprised. Of all the mechanics in the Calwell garages, Glomer, a green-skinned Findian whose dangly arm nearly reached his ankles, was by far the best. Starting from a single rented Bay 5 years earlier, Glomer now ran a vibrant trade, taking up a building and a half. That made him the garage's third largest occupant, after the Galt vaporator installation fleet and the storage space for the Settlers Fund vehicles. Since Glomer worked on all of those too, he and his assistants were seen almost everywhere.
"He's best speeder in Oasis,"
the mechanic said, his golden eyes alight in their white cavities.
"He's Marvel."
Orin grinned. Findians could never let go of a vowel, it seemed. And few beings he had met had more appreciation for a fine vehicle. On this one, Glomer was right. The USV-5 looked as if it belonged on a nicer planet. Orin had dithered over buying it. A farmer shouldn't put on airs. But selling water was as much a part of the job as finding it. And the high-volume city accounts didn't want to buy from someone who'd looked like he worked for a living. Well, that was fine. He could play that game. Glomer's lead assistant skittered past, carrying part of a metal airfoil. Something called a Vouvrian. The assistant was easily the most macabre thing in the garage, to Orin's thinking. Bipedal, but with an insect's head, and apparently a talent for thruster control systems. Orin didn't have a problem with non-humans. Compared with his parochial grandfather, his opinions were cosmopolitan. Any being willing to put its back into hard work was fine with him. Diligence knew no species, and neither did sloth. There were more than enough human bums around the Anchorhead Cantina to give his own kind a bad name. But Pappy Galt had been right on one thing. Business success was about taking the other's measure. Between any two people, a point existed where what one wanted intersected with what the other had. That point was price. And to get the best possible one, high or low, you had to see things the other person's way. But who knew what a Vouvrian or Bith was really thinking? You can't look a fellow in the eye when he's all eye. Orin had left Tatooine once, as a teenager. His grandfather had dispatched the hands to Rhodia to fetch a vaporator, Even a second-hand device from one of the more technologically advanced planets was far better than anything most Tatooine farmers had in their fields. Left at home, Danar had joked that Orin would never be heard from again once he'd seen the stars. But if anything, Orin's brief sojourn told him Tatooine was the real home of opportunity. The galaxy was full of hustlers, all scratching for a credit. And Rhodia, a humid place where people clustered under domes, jammed them together in one place like the jar he used to trap sandflies in. Keep them in there long enough, and they'd eat one another. No, Tatooine was much better. Mos Eisley might seem like a menagerie, but you could at least drive away. Tatooine had land, and Orin had his share. Thanking Glomer, he walked along the bays and looked back at his repulsor trucks in the garage. Too many were in the shop, as usual. Three more this morning. It was due not to any fault in Glomer's work, but to the boneheads that operated them. Orin's ostensible reason for going into the fields each day was to fine-tune the vaporators for better performance. But in fact, most of that time was spent checking up on his remote teams, who confounded him daily by inventing new ways to damage his machinery, his vehicles, or themselves. They were far behind in getting the fields ready for the harvest, and expenses had soared. He'd hoped the next generation would take some pressure off him. But Mullen and Vika had both somehow managed to reach their 20s without really growing up. Mullen's talent seemed to be ticking people off, not leading them. And Vika was, well, Vika. Jabe Calwell, though, had some of his late father's industry about him. Orin saw him playing a big role in things, if his mother would let him. But Orin would have to wear down Annalene first. Can't have a foreman whose mama won't let him work. Things had been quiet on the Tusken front in the days since the Bizarre incident. It would be a while before Plug Eye would get up the nerve or the warriors to try another Dawn raid. But hostilities were still continuing between mother and son, Orin heard, as he opened the door into the sales floor of the claim.
"It's not fair, Mom!"
The voice was male, young, newly deep, and indignant.
"It's not fair, and you know it!"
"Fair," Annalene replied. "What's fair got to do with the price of water?" Jabe was on his knees and surrounded